Welcome back to Cross Currents from KALW News. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area. I'm Hannah Baba. In November, California voters will decide whether or not to legalize the recreational use of marijuana. It's Prop 64 on your ballot. Already, the medicinal use of marijuana has been legal since voters passed a proposition back in 1996. But there's still some confusion and stigma around the plant's use, and much of that traces to public service announcements produced by the federal government, like this one from 1969.
Marijuana is an intoxicating, mind-muddling drug. Its use can lead to abnormal behavior, to psychological dependence, and to abuse of other drugs. The human brain, after all, is made for thinking, not fumigating. It's hardly a tinker toy for experimenting with drugs. This has been a public service message of the American Medical Association and your local station.
Later in the show, we'll hear from some Bay Area seniors who may remember that commercial. We'll join them as they take a field trip to learn more about the healing properties of cannabis. But first, we'll hear from Dr. Lori Volan. She heads Naturally Healing MD in Albany, where she consults on the science of medical marijuana and instructs on its therapeutic use. KALW's Ben Trefney reached her at her office.
So how many clients who come into your office are nervous about the idea of using medical cannabis?
I'd say majority of them. I have a practice that really is aimed towards folks that are trying to harness the medicinal properties of marijuana, and their biggest concern is not getting high.
Why do you think they feel that way?
I think that they're the residue of the large amount of propaganda that's been promulgated about the harmful effects. That's number one. Number two, I think that they're also affected by the stigma they associate with getting high from the use during the 60s and the 70s.
So how do you go about re-educating them about what cannabis is and can be?
So one of the things that I've found with a lot of medical marijuana users is they have no idea about dosage. THC, which is a psychoactive component of marijuana, has medicinal benefits at the appropriate dose. But then when you exceed that dose, that's when you start getting the adverse side effects of marijuana. And one of those is getting stoned. At higher levels, it's anxiety. At even higher levels, paranoia. And then when things really exceed their appropriate doses, you get things like hallucinations. So THC is the Goldilocks effect. A little doesn't provide a relief, just the right amount does. And excess of that is when you get the adverse effects, like getting stoned.
So what are the properties then that make cannabis a healing plant?
I wouldn't describe it as a healing plant. I would describe it as medicinally effective for a broad spectrum of symptoms. And, you know, broad enough that it would take care of a large number of ailments that patients come in seeking care from primary care physicians. Pain, anxiety, depression, insomnia. Those are sort of the top hitters in any primary care practice. And in my experience with marijuana, I would say that it is beneficial across all of those symptoms and really should not be considered a last resort, but should be considered a first-line treatment for those ailments.
Now, you've described yourself as downright conservative with medicine rather than as an alternative medicine doctor.
Absolutely.
So I'm wondering, how and when did you start treating people with cannabis?
I returned to California in 2000 after a 10-year absence, and at that point in time, Proposition 215 had been in effect for 4 years, and I began meeting patients who didn't need refills on things like their Valium, Ativan, Klonopin, Ambien, and when I asked them why, they reluctantly described their use of marijuana for the same conditions the pharmaceuticals were being prescribed for, and they were relieved with the effectiveness of it, and they had no significant deleterious side effects. And that's when I began looking at marijuana, because one thing you can count on from most painkillers, sleep aids, anti-anxieties, antidepressants, is their side effects, and they're quite adverse. These patients weren't having them. And that is when I started to look at cannabis like I look at all other medications in terms of the criteria for evaluating them, and I found that marijuana is often as effective without the side effects of pharmaceuticals and the pharmaceutical alternatives.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, you know, in doing some research for this conversation, I saw that the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937 uh-huh. is what effectively outlawed marijuana. Uh-huh. And before that, it was widely used for a wide variety of healing.
That's right.
So do you think it's comparable then to any other medicines?
I actually don't think it's comparable to any other medicines, because I don't know of any pharmaceuticals that have as wide-ranging a versatility as marijuana. If I were stuck on a desert island and I only had one drug was going to be available to me, marijuana for sure is what I would choose, because it is so effective across such a wide variety of symptoms.
And so people are familiar with smoking marijuana, or the image of that, and then edibles too. What are the different ways in which you apply this to help people with their pain or insomnia or whatever it is that you're treating them for?
So there's four ways of getting marijuana into your body: inhalation, sublingual, edible, and topical.
So I'm sorry, what is sublingual?
Sublingual is when it's absorbed directly under the tongue, and it is directly absorbed and goes directly to your organs. Just like when you inhale, it goes into your bloodstream and goes directly to your organs within minutes. When you eat marijuana or take a marijuana pill, the duration or the time of onset can be anywhere from 1 to 6 hours, so it's unreliable. And it's also metabolized into a completely different drug that is longer acting, more sedating, and more psychoactive, that can stay in your system for 20 to 30 hours. And that's 11-hydroxytetrahydrocannabinol. So because of that, it is not very controllable, especially for a patient that is new to cannabis. So I recommend initiating with either inhaled or sublingual products.
So how has the medical marijuana industry changed then? Since you've been involved with it for quite a while, it seems that it's much more mainstream now than it ever was before.
It has changed considerably, and primarily, in my perspective, it has changed with the sheer volume of products that really makes it overwhelming for patients to figure out how to begin a safe and effective medical marijuana practice. It is primarily, in my experience, geared towards a recreational user. And I say that because the majority of products are simply not appropriate for a cannabis-naive patient. They're just too high concentration of THC. And the market has not yet developed, I think, a sufficient quantity of products for medicinal use. And I don't know if that's going to change.
So is consumption of marijuana, is that something that's addictive?
Well, there are lots of studies that look at young adult use, beginning usually in the teens, and they do describe a syndrome usually with young adults who have begun heavy consumption during their adolescence having difficulty withdrawing from marijuana. And that difficulty entails change in mood, change in sleep patterns, in general anxiety. So it doesn't have the addictive properties of benzodiazepines and opiates, but it does have properties that make it difficult for some patients to stop using without experiencing those kinds of withdrawal symptoms.
So essentially, is it not necessarily a chemical addiction so much as maybe a feeling or a state of mind addiction?
Well, it doesn't seem to be a physiological addiction in the sense that you have changes in the underlying physiological mechanisms, but it does seem to have behavioral ramifications such that when you withdraw, you experience negative feelings.
Mm-hmm. So what do you see as the potential benefits and dangers of legalizing recreational marijuana, as voters could do in November?
I think it's going to make it more accessible and, most importantly, decriminalize its use and possession. Whether or not it is going to increase medicinal use, I think, remains to be seen. I think that it is not the legislation that's on the ballot that is going to make it more medicinally applicable, but it's the embracing by the established medical community that is going to enhance its medicinal use. And I don't see that happening yet. It's if a organization like Kaiser were to invest the time and resources into providing this for their patients, I think there would be a tremendous benefit to their patient population, their bottom line, and the satisfaction of their clients with their medical care.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think one of the biggest problems right now with medical marijuana is the lack of information and use by the older patient population. There is very low usage amongst older adults. It comes in at less than 4% in some of the studies. And then when you get to patients that are over the age of 64, it drops down to less than 1%. And this is the population that has a multitude of problems that are oftentimes effectively treated with marijuana with far less side effects than the pharmaceutical alternatives. So older adults and marijuana, I think, is a prime area for more investment in time and resources.